Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Peak A-League podcast. I'm your host, Gerald. And look, a couple of weeks ago, I said I'm making a promise that every week for the rest of the season, I would have an episode out. That promise lasted 1 week because I got to Friday and I still hadn't made an episode, and then I just didn't have time. I was away on the weekend, which we'll get to a little bit later on. And so I just didn't have time. But good news is I'm in the uni studio at the moment, so no videos for the time being. Maybe we'll roll it out around finals time, the video podcast. But yeah, I've got some time before Tuesday classes. So to be honest, Tuesday is probably my favorite episode, my favorite day to record an episode. I think you can sort of let everything digest from the weekend, and then it's a good time to float an episode back out and, you know, keep people thinking about the A-League just as it's starting to wrap up. And it's not too far into the week, but it's also, you know, 3 days' time. There's more football on, so it's a good time to have an episode that Tuesday, Wednesday sort of time. So that's when it'll be. We're going to get into the A-League that just happened, what it means for the rest of the season, the teams that I've wrote off that maybe shouldn't have been written off quite yet, but we'll get to that. And also, we're going to be talking a little bit of Socceroos because we're in March now, and there's rumours that Graham Arnold's picking a largely World Cup-based squad, but I'm going to be giving sort of the A-League players that I think deserve on merit to be part of that squad that plays Ecuador on home soil later this month. But we'll start off on Friday night. We go all the way back to Friday night. Adelaide United versus Melbourne City. Rumours during the day that the crowd was going to be sold out. It ended up being 10,270, which is very respectable. You know, a lot of talk preseason about the A-League wanting to average 10,000 crowds at all the games. And I think if you look at Adelaide as not being one of the biggest clubs, you'd kind of want, I think the idea is, you know, the top clubs would average 15 to 20,000. Some of the bottom clubs might average 5,000. Adelaide's probably one of those clubs in the middle. And although I've been a big advocate for them being probably part of like a big four or five in this league, I think they are probably sort of that lower big club. So if that makes sense. So I think for them to average 10,000 is fantastic. They are absolutely setting the benchmark right now in terms of how an A-League club should look. And not to harp on it too much, but their crowd's great. The stadium they have is absolutely perfect for football. You know, when you're behind the goals at both ends, you're right next to the action. They've, you know, built the roof on the grandstands on the side, so it's a really high, you know, high quality stadium. It's perfect. It's a perfect size. Yeah, they're not selling it out right now, but they're getting 10,000 in, and it still looks pretty full. And then come finals time, there's room for a few more people to you know, come in. And I was going to say, obviously, they can't host a grand final there because of the size, but obviously, they can't host a grand final there because of the corruption as well. So that's obviously something that they won't have to worry about anymore, which is great. But yeah, crowds are great. They do a lot of good stuff. I mean, they were the advocates, you know, the first ones to really push the pride stuff in the A-League, which was really good. And obviously, it's because they had Josh Cavallo. But he was at a number of A-League clubs before and didn't feel, you know, comfortable enough to show himself. But for whatever reason, he got to Adelaide and he felt he was safe enough to you know, share that with the world. So that's another tick for them, in my opinion, as well. On top of that, their youth development is just unbelievable. I mean, they've got Mo Touré and Yaya Dukli off in France at the moment. We've got Nestor Iracunda. They've got Alassane Touré as well, who's, you know, probably, you know, on a bit of a plateau in terms of his career at the moment. He's at MacArthur right now, having an okay season, had a really good pre-season with the Australia Cup and everything. But they produce just a number of good players. They've got Popovic in the squad at the moment, playing some really good football, only 20 or 21. So they are, yeah, they're as good as it gets for youth development. And they're my favourite A-League club. But anyway, 10,000 on the weekend, sorry to ramble, but it was really, really good. And it was such a good game. I talk about all the time, Adelaide just having this, it just feels like it's a fortress. But like, proof's in the pudding. I mean, Melbourne City have lost now 3 games for the year. And so, you know, I think it takes quite a lot to beat them. They were beaten by Sydney away earlier in the season. And then the victory got the better of them in a derby where, again, we always say that form gets thrown out of the window, really. So this was some performance from Adelaide. And I felt like it was coming for the last couple of weeks. They've been in some great form as of late. They're undefeated now in their last 8 matches, and that includes 4 wins, 4 draws. So their form has been a little bit since the new year, you know, because some of those games they drew against Victory, they drew against the Wanderers when they were up late. They had that great comeback victory against Western United, but they, you know, they've been a bit inconsistent and patchy, and I felt like eventually it was just going to click for them. You know, they couldn't beat the Victory last week, and this was a game where it just all fell together. It was unbelievable. You know, they conceded early, but then they came back at half time through, is it Lachlan Barr, I believe, that guy that earlier in the season I said I'd never seen play an A-League game before, but I have been taking note of him more recently, and he's a quality defender. Craig Goodwin scored just a lovely, lovely goal. He is just so exciting to watch. I think we're just so privileged to have such a top-class player in the A-League, especially considering he's Australian. 31 years of age, maybe he's coming towards the twilight of his career, but I still think like he could definitely make an impact somewhere else, maybe lower-level championship type of club. I think he could certainly be a decent player. Such a great hitter of the ball. He's got 8 goals, 6 assists this season. One of the most complete attacking players in the league. Then you got a goal from Louis Dorigo as well, and it was all sealed up by Nestori Irinkunda. He came on for 15 minutes. He thought, surely he can't do it again. But every time that guy goes near the ball, there's just something going on. It just feels like he can, you know, he can score. He's going to do something exciting. And what a great finish on his non-preferred. Just such a great, great player. I think we said it with Garang Kuol. Don't take it for granted. Watch him as much as you can while you can. Get to the games when he's playing in your city, because, you know, he's not going to return to Australia for a long, long time once he leaves, which I don't think is going to be far away. He's 17 years of age now. In my opinion, he's more talented than Garang Kuol. I think that's evident. Kuol, I mean, he's had some cracking goals too. The one he scored in Gosford earlier in the season in that game where he scored the brace, that one where he just smashed it from the corner, like at the far post. It was unreal. But Irinkunda scored, I think, 6 goals now in the A-League, or 5 or 6 goals. They've all been ridiculously good. I mean, he's the most exciting Australian player we've seen in a long, long time. And I think Irinkunda and Kuol are just in a different stratosphere to Arzani. So anyone saying, oh, don't believe the hype, you know, look what happened to Arzani, it's just so different. And if Arzani didn't injure his ACL, who knows? But I think even back then his attitude wasn't the best. Certainly for me, he's a write-off now. But we're talking about Adelaide and City here. Melbourne City, I don't think they've got anything to be too worried about. You know, they've lost 3 games for the year. It's going to happen at times. They still put in a decent shift. McLaren was very, very quiet. I suppose some credit has to go to the defence of Adelaide for that. They shut him down and shut his service down ultimately. A nice header from Tilio as well in this game. He's in great form too. I think he's another one that we might be sort of, you know, seeing the end of his Australian career at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts next season off at a different club, and I would be pretty happy with that. I didn't like when he signed a 3-year deal because I thought he can go off. But to be fair, I think last year, even though he was good, it was still kind of like, yeah, he's got potential. Whereas this season, he's actually put that potential into work. You know, at the start of the season, he couldn't, you know, he was on the bench every week. Now he's a regular starter in this team. He's got 5 goals, 5 assists already this season. He's really starting to come into his own in a very, very good Melbourne City side. So full credit to him, but unfortunately for City, it was a loss. They're still 6 points above the Wanderers with the game in hand, and don't forget, in that game in hand, they're already in front, so almost, you know, 9 points ahead. On Saturday, we had 4 matches, including a simultaneous kickoff, which is just weird because then we had 1 game on the Sunday. I still don't understand the fixturing of this league, but we started off in Wellington at 1 p.m. They got a win over the Newcastle Jets. I didn't write the Jets off last week. Oh, they're on 24 points. I don't see them making finals. I said Wellington would miss and the Jets would make it, I think, but I don't know. I don't even back my own opinions anymore, guys. I don't know why you're listening. But Zawada scored again. It was a penalty, but still in great form. An assist for Crave as well. All 3 goals were scored in a matter of about 10, 15 minutes of game time. And that was that. Wellington got another win. Newcastle typically just struggling away from home a little bit. And they're not in the best form, coming off the loss against Western the week before as well. So Adelaide this week for them, season at a crossroads a little bit. They really need to turn it around. But Western City and Central Coast, this was a great game. Just under 10,000 there, pretty good crowd. And Western Sydney got a big win. And I think this is the one that turned heads a little bit, because for me, their form lately has been a bit, it's been a bit up and down. They got the draw against Adelaide, which showed a lot of character. Before that was a derby loss. Then they got the big 4-0 win against MacArthur last week. But I think MacArthur are a pretty easy team to beat once, you know, everyone seems to be able to smash them. So they've had a few big losses this season. They lost their courage. They're in all sorts. And there's stories coming out about that club at the moment. It's just ridiculous. So I think that one wasn't the biggest barometer. But then this game, just a quality win from Western Sydney. And I think one that, yeah, like I said, raised some eyebrows. People starting to go, maybe they've got what it takes to be a genuine contender. I think Adelaide and Melbourne City are the two touted to be the grand finals. I think Western Sydney can't be far behind them. I said on Twitter that the midfield's probably the best we've seen in the A-League. Maybe that's a stretch, but it's got to be up there. In my opinion, it's the best this season. Callum Neuenhoff is doing ridiculous things. I mean, Sydney FC have got to be scratching their heads wondering, how did we let him go without giving him more opportunity? I'm sure he would have preferred to stay at Sydney had he have been given game time, but we've seen it time and time and time again with Sydney FC. They let young players go because they don't give them enough game time. Daniel Arzani's one. He went to Melbourne City and shone for a couple of years. Marco Tilio left Sydney FC, again, didn't get enough game time, played some great football. Max Burgess was one who left, went to Wellington, Western United, played some very good football. He's back there now because he got homesick or whatever. But, you know, they were lucky on that one. They've let a lot of young players go. Neuenhoff probably is going to go for a decent fee when he leaves Western Sydney. So that's the biggest loss of all for Sydney FC, I think, because you can replace, you know, talent. But that sale that Western Sydney are probably going to benefit from is something that they've lost. Brandon Borrello scored the opener in this game, playing more, you know, up the pitch this season as more of a striker type role. He scored 8 goals and he scored 4 in his last 3. So he is in ridiculous form and it's coming at just the right time for him with the Socceroos games coming right up in a couple of weeks. Only 27 still, Brandon Borrello, and you know, he's long been known to have a lot of talent. And left the A-League early, maybe a little too early. I think when he came home, I thought this isn't the end of his career. This is, you know, a reset and maybe a chance for him to pick himself back up. And we're seeing that absolutely coming, you know, right in front of our eyes. A red card for Marcelo as well. But upon review, it's only being given a 1-week suspension. I think originally it was going to be a little bit more for him. It was a little bit of a questionable red card, in my opinion, but whatever. Didn't affect Western Sydney. They went on to score a few minutes after he got sent off, and they held on for the rest of the game. Coming on off the bench in this game, right at the death, was Cassini Yenge. Now, we know Mark Rudin loves a really late, pointless sub. He made 3 in the 89th minute and after Milanovic and Ninkovic, the others. But Yenge, that is his first appearance. He's played the last couple of weeks, guys. But yeah, hopefully soon we see a little bit more. Played 1 minute on the weekend, and I just think scored his first goal for the club in that derby, and hasn't that was right before the World Cup break, and hasn't really played much football since. So really hope to see him get back out on the pitch soon. But I guess for them, you know, Brandon Borrello's shining up there, so there's no real reason for them to do it. But the other game, Saturday, 5 p.m, was Western United taking on Perth Glory in Ballarat. I was there for that one. That's where I was away for the weekend. Spent the weekend there. It was a nice little place. Had a Sovereign Hill trip on the Sunday, which was very nice. But Mars Stadium is a nice place to watch football. The crowd was a bit, it was reported 2,500. I thought it was probably, you know, around the 1,800 mark. But, inflation is very, very real in this country, no doubt. So Western were getting battered at the start of this game, and I was feeling very worried. Up until, you know, when the goal got conceded, it was Jordan Elsie scored from a bit of a scramble. Young made a save, but then just they couldn't clear the ball out, and Jordan Elsie just thumped it into the back of the net, and nothing that Jamie Young could do. And that was really just a result of just Perth putting Western United to the sword in the opening 20 minutes. But after that, the tide shifted a little bit, and I actually started to feel a bit of confidence in the way Western were playing. And as a result, Dumbia scored a really nice header from a Neil Kilkenny corner, I believe it was. A really strong header. Maybe it was a free kick, but and just a few minutes later, Wales had the ball, dashed down the right-hand side, couldn't be caught by Clisby or whoever was there, and whipped it in. Noah Botic made it 3 goals in 4 matches, I think. or maybe four in four or four in five or something. He's in unbelievable form, and that was the best of the lot so far. I scored a brace against Newcastle last week, but this was such a clean goal. Took it on the chest, then just smashed it home. Prijevic is on the bench, but that was a Prijevic-like goal, and I honestly, I was big, very harsh on Noah Bocic, especially when Dylan Wenzel-Hall's left, and I thought we didn't even really give him a chance, and we're starting Bocic, who isn't scoring, but it just shows that, obviously, the stuff he's doing at training and stuff, John Aloisi had a reason to start him. And now, after gaining a bit of confidence, being in the side for a bit, he's just taking his chances and doing some really, really nice stuff. So well done to Noah Bocic, only 21 years of age. He's, you know, long been a talent in, you know, for Australia, played at the Under-17 World Cup for Australia and scored a lot of goals. And, yeah, it's a privilege to watch him go about his business at the moment. So too, Leo Lacroix. He's found some form again, and it's just so good to see him have confidence going up for the aerial balls, passing the ball around nicely. I don't feel so worried every time he's got the ball. He's starting to win me back over again, and his last few performances have been very, very good. So as Western makes a late charge for the finals, it's still 7 games to go. They're currently 5 points outside of the top 6. Which is where Sydney FC sit at the moment on 27 points. The goal difference is a big issue as well, negative 10. But at the back end of the season, they've got Sydney, so that'll be a chance for them to knock them off. They play Victory this week. They play Brisbane. They play Perth. So some pretty winnable games coming up. They've also got City and Adelaide away, which will be tough. Central Coast as well. So they're going to have to find, you know, a couple of wins against those top sides. They're on 22 points right now. They probably need 5 wins from 7. So it's still a very tough task. But mathematically and you know, theoretically, still in the mix at the moment. So it's good to see because they could have very easily laid down and just copped the season as a write-off. But as Ben Garucho said post-game, they think they're still in the mix and they think they can give the finals a real shake-off. And I think sometimes, you know, with having a top 6, you just have to peak at the right time. So they're probably 1 win behind where you'd want them to be to make a late charge at the moment. And I think back to that Adelaide game a lot where they were 2-0 up. I think back to the game against MacArthur where they're in front and MacArthur had a man down and then they conceded 2, came back for a draw. You know, they've dropped some pretty big points this season that they shouldn't have dropped. But all you can do is keep on winning. Western United, they've won 2 in a row. And we'll see how they go. Troisi came off with an injury in the 40th minute. So Diamanti got 50 minutes of game time. He was unbelievable. You know, I just, watching him, I just thought, how are you 39 years old or whatever he is? Like, just so clean with the ball, holds it up well, got fouled 6 times because he just draws them in. Like, he's just such a fantastic player. And his body, he's just going so well at the moment. He's running as well as I've ever seen him run. You know, I've been watching him play in the A-League for 4 years now, and he is moving very, very well. I think his role shifted a bit throughout the years, but I think you can get 45 minutes out of him every game. He's going to win us some games in the back end, and this is probably the end of his career. So I say again, you know, if he's coming to your city, go and watch him because he's just so talented. Like, he had a chance that almost scored from far out, and it was just like, you know, just the sort of quality that we're not used to seeing in the A-League. I think we've got a lot of it at the moment. And Diamanti is one of those players, so enjoyable to watch. But another win for Western. Perth, that probably rules them out on 20 points. But, you know, you never know what a win or two could do. They're away from Macedonia Park now. We'll talk about that a little bit later. The other game on Saturday night, though, was the Big Blue. Sydney FC and Melbourne Victory in front of a healthy crowd of 15,000. It's a strong drop-off from when they played in round one. I think it was 25,000 there or something like that. But, yeah, pretty stock standard game here. 1-0 win for Sydney FC. A red card for Max Burgess, which was a red. People were saying that it wasn't. But, not everyone's ever going to be happy with a red card decision. But I thought that one was pretty clear cut. But he got an assist before he got sent off. Caceres scored. And they held on from then on out. Melbourne Victory sitting on the bottom once again on 18 points. After that derby game, you felt like maybe they were going to make a bit of a push. But, they're 9 points outside of the mix at the moment, so pretty tough from there, I would have thought. Yeah, that was that game. Not much to report. I didn't get to catch much of it, to be honest. But I think if they can retain Miranda for another season, if Damien De Silva's going to hang around for more than the rest of the season, I don't know. I think he was signed probably for more than 6 months, but I don't know. It's a very good defense. Cadet might move on. He's a sort of the import player that'll come for a year. He's been okay, but I think they can do without him next season. Gary, I'd probably keep if you can. And Paul Izzo's doing fine. Brillante, time to go, in my opinion. Connor Chapman's been serviceable since coming in. They've got good young wingers. They'll get another big import in with Nani going. Still haven't really seen much of Bruce Kamau, so maybe he's not ready. That Romero looks to be good so far in the little bits we've seen. Economides, I think it's time to get him off your books at paying him $1.2 million a year, whatever it is. But I have a feeling he signed a three-year deal, so he'd still have one to go. But I think if you could shop him around and try and get someone else to take that contract, I would do that because I think they haven't got really a return on investment thus far. But maybe you ride it out for an extra year. I don't know. A lot of people blame his knee injury, but he's just never looked that dangerous for them. Christopher Economides, I mean, before his ACL, he was in the Socceroos conversation with Perth Glory. He's got two goals and an assist this season. Last season, two assists, scored one in the cup as well. Before, you know, before that, had a 9-goal, 3-assist season with Perth. He was a different player, you know, and unfortunately, I think he's not even in like the top 10 or 15, 20 players in the league, and he's, you know, probably the highest paid. So something needs to be done about that. But for Victory, time to give some kids an opportunity. Felipe started this game. I think that's the right direction. Give them an opportunity and see what you can get out of them. You never know. And you know, start fresh for next season, because unfortunately, I think this one is done for them now. I know I didn't write them off last week, but I'm pretty much ready to do so now. MacArthur, another team I wrote off, proving me wrong at the moment. A good win. They went 2-0 up, then all of a sudden Brisbane scored 2 in 2 minutes and gave them a real fright. But it was Jake McGing with the winner. Let's talk about Matthew Miller for a second. The right back, he's got 5 goals for the season. He's a very good player. He was at St Mirren last season. Didn't get a lot of opportunity. I think that's why he's back here. He's been around the A-League for a little while. Played at Newcastle twice. Was at the Mariners originally. Still only 26. A very good player, in my opinion. But maybe he'll just play in the A-League. You know, Josh Risden vibes about this. Probably a little bit too good to be a regular A-League player forever, but maybe he's enjoying life in Australia. But I think another stint in Scotland could do him some good. I don't know. But overall, MacArthur played pretty well here. I think Philip Curto is a shadow of the player that he once was. I think he's probably the one that I'd be replacing in this side. But I look at that midfield and I do like it. Bacchus has put in a shift all season. I like De Silva in that more, type defensive type role. Holman's very good. I think if Holman was at a bigger club, he'd probably be spoken about a bit more. 21 years of age, played 10 games this season, started all of those. So, he's in a really impressive stretch of games at the moment. He did get red carded earlier this season, I think, but I really like him. Arabuli's been good, scored a nice goal in this game. Alessandro Touré, he's still only 22, but yeah, he needs to get a move on a little bit with his stuff. For me, Brisbane, not threatening at all. That the new striker still yet to score, I believe. I think they're a bit of a write off. Two teams that I still don't think will play finals. Even though MacArthur, he's only 3 points out. I just don't think they've got it in them, and Brisbane the same. We move on to next week. Perth are back at HBF Park against the Wanderers. I wonder what sort of crowd they'll draw in. They've been getting consistently just under 4,000, like selling out Macedonia Park. You'd hope they can get 10,000, though. You know, get the hashtag fill the park going again. Have cheap tickets. Get the shed pumping. I think the upgrades to the stadium are more like screens and that sort of thing. And then it's been pretty much ready, but they've had like concerts there and stuff lately. So they haven't been able to have it. But so it'll be really good to see them back at HBF. It's one of the nicer A-League, stadiums, boutique sort of thing. It's a really nice venue. At night, the sun will be setting. It's like literally so nice there. And I think this is going to be a great game because Western Sydney are coming in with a bit of form. They'll have their tails up. They're only a few points away from the top spot, which would be unreal. But Perth won't be an easy game there. I think they might have lost one or two games at home all season. They've been pretty convincing at home. But that was a different home. I mean, I think the same sort of vibes about it, though, will be, especially if they can pack it out. We saw for that first Sturridge game when they packed it out, it's so good, it's so loud. The shed's underrated in terms of an active support group, so that'll be exciting. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw for that game, but who knows? It could be Western Sydney's night anyway. But if Western Sydney win that, I think the next home game, they'll start to get some big crowds leading into finals. It's a sleeping giant, Western Sydney, and they just need one more big result to wake them up. They've got the derby next week, don't they? Yes, the Allianz Derby. That's going to be huge if they come into that on three straight wins. So cannot wait to see what happens there. But I'll go a draw. Central Coast and MacArthur to kick off Saturday's action then. Pretty straightforward here. 3-0 to Central Coast for me. They're in fourth at the moment, only 4 points in the eight, but only 3 points off, in the six, but only 3 points off second. So they're right in the mix at the moment, Central Coast. It's easy after a loss to sort of think a team's in bad form. To be fair, though, they've only won one of their last eight games or seven games. Their last win outside of that, one of their last wins was against MacArthur, interestingly enough, back in Jan. That was their, since then they've only had one win. So I think they'll get the job done. I'm going to say 3-1 there. Central Coast, a little bit too good, but MacArthur have got plenty to fight for at the moment. So who knows? Newcastle and Adelaide. I'm going to go Adelaide here, 2-0. They're in some good form, and I think that will continue pretty straightforward there. Wellington and Sydney FC. This is an interesting one. 28 points for Wellington, 27 for Sydney FC. Both coming into this off a win. Wellington have got two wins and a draw in their last three. For Sydney, three wins in their last five. They've got a derby after this. They'll want to come in with some momentum to get a second derby win in, 5 weeks or whatever. I'm going to say this one will be 2-1 to Wellington, though. Like them at home at the moment. They're doing some good stuff. Really interesting losing those three big players. I mean, they lose players every season, but Ollie Sale's been around for a while. It's strange that he's potentially going to move to Perth was the rumour. I thought if he'd move, it'd maybe be overseas or something. He's the New Zealand international keeper. He's a good keeper, but I didn't think he'd move to Australia by any stretch. Clayton Lewis on the way out as well. And who was the other one? Oh, Stephen Ugarkovic. That guy moves around, more than Western United do for the home games. He loves to change clubs. Rumours Melbourne City will be going for him. Would make sense with, the belief that Aidan O'Neill might be finally making a move overseas. So that would be a good replacement for City. For sure, he's one of the better sort of senior midfielders in the competition. They just keep getting hit with this, Wellington. I don't think any other club loses key players every season quite like Wellington does. But I guess that's the tax of trying to get Australian players to play outside of Australia, but didn't expect Ollie Sale to turn his back on the club like that. Who knows the circumstances, but I think they'll win this game and continue a really strong finals push to make finals again in another year where everyone tipped them to be at the bottom. It's commendable what Wellington have done again this season. Melbourne City and Brisbane Roar, this has got 5-0 written all over it. I'm sorry, Brisbane fans. Easy win for City here, bouncing back after a loss last week. Then on Labor Day, we've got a game. Monday night, I don't know what's going on with this, because I play indoor Monday nights, and I think there might be an indoor game on, even though it's a public holiday. I think I might be working. But it's at 6 p.m., so I'm just a cafe worker, so I'll be clocked off by 4, ready to go. So, I think I'll be in attendance for this one. Some of you may know I used to do the Western Service Crew social media. I've stepped away from it, and it has become, go and look at the Western Service Crew post. It's a little bit menacing. It says, game against the Melbourne Bucket Throwers. I've left it in what I thought were capable hands, and I'm not sure about that anymore, but it's not my reins, it's not my responsibilities any longer, so I don't mind. But I'm excited to go and sit in Bay 12, the corner, for that game. I'm pretty much done for being an active supporter. I just want to watch the games now. It should be good. Western United or Western Service Crew are doing a really cool thing for this game. They're having a pre-game pub in Werribee, which is where Western is going to play out in Tarni. It's about 15 minutes away, both in Wyndham, in the Wyndham area. And there's not a lot of pubs in Tarni at the moment. It's much more of, it's just a suburb area. But in Werribee, they've got the main street with a bunch of pubs. The bridge is one of the better classic Werribee pubs. So it's maybe a 5-10 minute walk from the Werribee station. So everyone's going to meet there, have a few drinks, then head in from Werribee station. I think it goes straight to Richmond. So that's a really cool initiative. They're going to do that for the Melbourne City game later this season as well, because Western United will be playing home games out of Tarni next season. So there's that one grandstand, which if you've seen it, it looks like, pretty stock standard NPL level, might fit 600, 700 people. But I think as well, from some discussions that I've had in the past with people that work at the club, there might be a similar to Macedonia Park type of, temporary grandstand situation. And also, you know, people won't mind standing around if they've got some decent places to do so. But it is kind of in the middle of nowhere, so I don't think, it's not like there's going to be a hill to stand on. So it might be a bit weird having everyone standing on level ground. So, yeah, temporary grandstands will be the best way to go if that's the case. It should fit about 5,000. And I think there's some confidence within the club that Western United will be training out of there and probably ready to have some home games there at the start of next season. So that's unreal. I think if you look at the fixture, the game against Melbourne City, it's a home game. It's in late April, I think. It's left as TBC, and I think that was under the belief that maybe it would be ready to have a game there in Tynede for the end of the season, but I don't think that's the case. And, you know, we're used to delays. So if it's ready by next season, it's a little bit late because it's start of the fifth season rather than start of the third, and it's not the main stadium. But as long as we're playing in Tynede, I think it shuts people up and it will actually get people involved. And I think we'll get a much better gauge of the crowd. If it sells out, you got 5,000 people packing it in at Tynede, there's some real pressure to go build that stadium, get them 15,000 seats or whatever, or just upgrade the training ground. I don't think anyone would be too bothered because there's going to be a lot of training pitches there. So eventually, if that's going to, you know, they want to build a couple of big stands and make this just, you know, makeshift stadium, then the Western players can train on another pitch and they can just play on this one. If imagine you could just have like 7,000 seats or something, that'll be enough and it'll be so cool. You know, for away fans, like especially Victorian City fans, to come travel. And train station's going to be built there by, I think, 2026, which isn't that far away anymore. It sounded a long time away in 2019, but it's not that far away now. They just got a grant approval, some government approval. There's going to be some shopping centres built around in the same area because houses are constantly going up in that area as well. Because Tynede's very developed, but you go further down Sayers Road and it's, you know, it's dirt and stuff. But now a lot of houses going up in the area in that, where that precinct's going to be. So the quicker everything else goes up, houses, shopping centres, train station, it just makes more sense for the stadium and the precinct to get built as well. The priority was that training ground and the headquarters because, you know, get the office there, get the players training there, then get the games going there, and all of a sudden, you know, you pretty much got your football club built. And that's they're not doing it as quickly as what we would have liked, but they're definitely making inroads and they're constantly posting progress updates both on the Western socials and just on the Wyndham Council website and newsletters and that sort of thing. So they're trying to get the people of Wyndham to rally around it, and I think it's working pretty well. So bit of a long rant. For that game as well, I'll tip at Western United 1-0 win as it was on Boxing Day. But interesting to see how much of a victory crowd turns up. It is a public holiday and it is a home game for them. I think restrictions will still be pretty harsh, but we'll see. Less about the actors, but more about the general public, how many of them are going to turn up to this game. But yeah, that is it for that. We've gone 32 minutes, but I'll quickly talk about my Socceroos call. So I saw Tom Williams, good friend of the show, say that Graham Arnold is going to play the same World Cup squad. I don't know if that was like a quote from like an interview or something. I didn't see anything except for that, but I think it was like, it wasn't like a rumor. It was like an actual thing that Graham Arnold said, that he's going to keep the World Cup squad the same. Obviously you've had Vukovic retire. So I think Joe Gauchy needs to slot in for him. He's had a great A-League season. We've got some good Australian keepers playing well overseas. Is it Howard Bell or something? Or is it, there's like a double namer playing well somewhere. And then we've got that other guy, Bidola Kapich, playing well at Huddersfield. But I'd give it to Gauchy. We're playing in Australia. He's been playing really good football. He's young. Just give it to him. I was ready to send him to the World Cup. And yeah, keep Redmayne in the squad as well. It's not really that big of a deal. I think Langerak is retired from international football now as well, surely. He's not going to come down for this. It'd just be a slap in the face, really, after everything that's happened. I would give Brandon Brello a go. Matt Leckie's injured, so that spot's might be opened. I would give that to him. And then Nestor Irukundo, I don't know who you're going to take out, but let that kid play, man. He deserves it. He's been in great form in the A-League. I think those are the three for me that I would love to see rewarded with some Socceroos football. Because, yeah, we know about Irukundo and we love him and everything, but the general Australian fans, like the 50,000 that are going to turn up to Marvel, maybe it's 30,000, whatever, probably don't know much about him. Even if they do follow the A-League a bit, you know, they have their victory scarf at home or whatever, they might not really know about what's going on at the moment. And that kid is lighting up the A-League. And I think if he could do something big against Ecuador, it would just be so great. So would love to see those guys come in. I'm not sure if I'm going to go. It's a Tuesday night. I think I've got footy training. But maybe I will. It's not often you get to see those guys. I really want to see some Riley McGree, Aaron Moy, you know, the guys that, like, Harry Suter, you know, now that we've got a proper Premier League player, someone who starts in the Premier League every week, it'd be a privilege to watch them go about their business. I've never actually seen Harry Suter play in person because I went to the Socceroos in Jan last year. Against, was it China they played or something, Vietnam maybe? And he obviously was recovering from that ACL. So, it would be great to see him, just see him in person, how big he is and everything. that is it for today. Show ran a little bit longer. I think some of it was just me rambling a little bit. So, sorry about that. But still just getting back into the comfort of doing podcasting. But, I hope you guys did enjoy this episode as much as I did. It was a nice little morning rant, and now I'll go off to class and be pretty bored. So thank you guys all for listening. Podcast numbers are still, the last episode still did so well. I don't know, like, who all of you people are listening to this, but thank you so much once again. I hope this has made your train ride or whatever you're doing, morning walk or something, a little bit easier. And I hope you're getting excited because A-League finals aren't that far away. I can't wait to buy my A-League grand final ticket before I know if my team's playing in it and whatnot. But anyway, that is all. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you all this time next week, Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday morning, whenever this goes up. But yeah, thank you so much, and goodbye.